Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noah. Always a pleasure to be able to spend a positive hour learning new things about how to live a longer and happier and healthier life. Today, we begin our program with a study from Kaduna State University in Nigeria, and it's about the antidepressive effects of chili pepper. Research has found that chili peppers, which is capsicum annuum, possesses antidepressive properties, which makes it a promising treatment for depression. The study was published in the European Journal of Medicinal Plants and aimed to determine the antidepressant potential of a methanol fruit extract of chili pepper, and that's what they did. So why not add one capsule, and you can try for yourself. It may seem a little hot, but it's very healing. And they found that it makes a difference. You don't have to use a lot. Or you can sprinkle some on your food. But always take your chili pepper capsule with a smoothie. It helps get it into your system without any discomfort. But it works. Also works on pain, especially in your joints. Now, the Scripps Research Institute just did a study on the antioxidants in fruits, and they in turn boost your immunity and protect your thymus gland. So the takeaway message is simple. Eating more fruit and vegetables or taking antioxidant supplements like vitamin C and beta carotene may combat one of the most harmful aspects of aging by protecting a vital immune system organ. Scientists demonstrated how aging sabotages the thymus gland, weakening the immune system and putting the body, especially of elderly people, at greater risk of infection. But the irreversible damage could be reduced by the action of antioxidants like vitamin C. Experiments showed that antioxidants, which are abundant in fruits and vegetables, cut down the destruction wrought by a highly reactive byproduct of normal metabolism. So, understand something. The thymus gland ages more rapidly than any other tissue in the body, diminishing the ability of older individuals to respond to new immunological challenges, including evolving pathogens and vaccines. So, for the first time, this study showed a mechanistic link between antioxidants, that's your primary diet if you're a vegan, and normal immune function. That opens up new avenues for potential treatments that could improve immune defenses in the aging population. So that's really good. And by the way, just as an aside, I don't want to go into the whole chemistry, but hydrogen peroxide is produced by all cells as a result of the process that converts food into energy using oxygen. But it is highly destructive and can tear apart cell membranes and scramble your DNA. Antioxidants, such as those produced naturally through your diet and body, can trap the hydrogen peroxide and minimize the damage. Hence, as your organs age, especially your thymus gland, you're going to be deficient in what is called catalase, C-A-T-A-L-A-S-E. That allows the damage caused by hydrogen peroxide to go unchecked. So we need our vitamin C and vitamin E and zinc and all the other antioxidants every day. So just make sure that you're getting your antioxidants on a daily basis. It's really important. For those of you like myself who love reading, especially the classics and history, according to the University of Sussex in the United Kingdom and Yale University, 30 minutes of reading a day could add years to your life. Now, I don't know about you, but back in my youth, when I was 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, when I was beginning to observe things but not always understand them, I noticed that my aunts and uncles did a lot of reading. Every time I went to their home, they were sitting in a chair and reading. And I didn't think anything of it. But later, I enjoyed reading. In fact, I tried to speed read and learn as much as I could and separate out what was not essential from what was essential. And at one time, I had a personal home library of over 5,000 books. In fact, I think there's some photographs somewhere on my website showing you my apartment and all the books. So that was a passion. Well, if you like reading, good for you. Now in a new study, people who read a book for about 30 minutes a day were found to live approximately 2 years longer than those who didn't read at all. So ask yourself, once you graduate from high school, if you don't go to college, or if you go to college and don't go to graduate school, if you go to graduate school and then you're out, how often do you take the time to find a book and read it? Not just a fiction book, something popular in the moment, but something that might inspire you to deeper thought, a motivational book, a book on history, on culture, on areas of life that you had not yet understood or mastered. That's the key. So that's what they're showing. So if you can read 30 minutes a day and gain 2 years to your lifespan, imagine if you read an hour a day, 30 minutes in the morning, 30 minutes in the evening. Make that time. So curl up with a good book. It shows that it can improve your social skills by improving your ability to read the thoughts and feelings of others. Researchers at the University of Sussex in England found that reading was, quote, the most effective way to overcome stress. Even better than listening to music, having a cup of tea, or going for a walk. Reading has been proven to be a great way to keep the mind sharp. It may reduce mental decline by 32%, helping prevent Alzheimer's disease. I think that's pretty cool, all right? And the older you get, the more time you should spend reading. They're recommending a minimum of 3.5 hours a week. I suggest 1 hour a day, or doubling that, 7 hours a week, minimum. And by the way, those who read the most tended to be women with college educations and high incomes. Okay, understandable. Now, another study that's also very important, and I'm trying to select a wide variety of studies. This comes from University of California at San Diego School of Medicine, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell Metabolism. And it talks about the modern diet, which is a highly processed diet, over-refined diet. It's a deadly diet. It gets you sick and causes the coating of your DNA and gut bacteria to pass on poor immune functions to your children. So, from Yale University and the Nuremberg University in Germany, pay attention, get rid of the processed foods in your diet. If you want hummus, make it yourself. Easy to do. Soak your garbanzo beans overnight, or buy a can of organic garbanzo beans that have been soaked in seaweed so they naturally digest easily, don't cause gas. And then put them in a blender with some extra virgin olive oil and also some garlic, fresh organic garlic. Don't buy the garlic from China. And also a raw sweet onion, like a Vidalia onion, and then a teaspoon of mustard and a quarter teaspoon of horseradish. Blend it up. You've got your own hummus. And I can assure you it's going to taste a lot better than anything you buy at a store. All right? Again, please understand what I'm saying, because it's really simple. Our modern diet is overprocessed, overrefined. And the more processing that occurs, the more the natural nutrients, especially the antioxidants, are destroyed, where the natural fibers or natural oils are eliminated. That in turn means that the gut, where you have these trillions of bacteria, what are called the biome, they need good, healthy, living bacteria, what you would get if you had some coconut yogurt, non-dairy, but grated bacteria. Anything that gives you probiotics and prebiotics, like some apple cider, that's a prebiotic. And beet juice, that's also got prebiotics. Sauerkraut's got probiotics. Anything that's fermented is going to give you pre or full on probiotics. And the more you get into your system, the healthier your gut's going to be. The healthier your gut, the healthier your immune system. It's that simple. Turns off inflammation too. Helps you if you have allergies. Helps you if you have autoimmune conditions. Because if you don't have good bacteria, you have an increase in inflammatory conditions like allergy and autoimmune conditions. So take care of your gut bacteria, and it will help take care of your immune system. Simple. And one last study today, and this is an important study because it talks about obese individuals also have fewer white blood cells to fight infection than cells they do possess, have reduced what are called phagocytosis capability. Now, this is important. I'll tell you why. And also just keep in mind that we need to have lower body mass index. That's very important. And I want us to get our body fat levels down. Exercising properly, having a good healthy diet can do exactly that. So you have less of the fat cells around the body, around the waist, and that's very dangerous. And I say people, well, mine's 30%. That's not healthy. That's not good. Get it down to somewhere between 10 and 12%. All right. Is it doable? Yes, it's doable. We've taken a group of individuals who had very high fat content and got them down into athletic, very normal and healthy. You're going to live a longer life, all other things being equal. And by the way, another little study, University of Washington, talks about more screen time contributes to more chronic sleep deprivation, especially in teens, and that's not good. So here's what we need to know. A growing body of research is finding strong links between sleep, mental health, and screen time in teens and tweens, the term for pre-adolescent children around the ages of 10 to 12. Amid an unprecedented mental health crisis, which some 42% of adolescents in the United States are suffering from some mental health issues. And partly because the teens are not getting good sleep and because they got those electronic devices booming out electromagnetic pulses, frequencies, every second. And they put it under their pillow so not to miss something. Yeah. Don't allow them to take it in the room at night. Limited. Even if they don't like it, what they don't like is not important. If what they do like is dangerous to their health. So let's get the weight off by exercising and eating healthy. Let's get a good night's sleep. And let's limit our time on a computer. It's not difficult. But it takes, you know, it takes some motivation and some guidance. And hopefully other peers who are doing the same thing, they can motivate you to do it. That's all we have time for today on Health and Healing. We're going to take a break. Come right back. Please stay with us. And welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to play a clip now that you will not see anywhere else in the media. You won't hear about it. This will be completely erased. But it's important because this is Dr. Jessica Rose. Dr. Rose is a double PhD. She is an outstanding scientist. She has a great reputation. She's published in the peer-reviewed literature and a whole history of being non-controversial. But then she started seeing what was wrong with the mandated vaccines. And she began to use her research skills, because that's her passion, researching and immunology. And she found a study that is 11 years old that shows that the nanoparticles that they used in this vaccine was causing damage back then. For those of you who are not aware of what I'm talking about a year ago, I was the first in the United States to bring you reports of morticians. First, it was morticians out of Great Britain, then morticians out of the United States, and then we passed these videos on to Dr. Cole and pathologists, medical doctors, who specialize in understanding why someone died. And then they looked at the autopsy report and they were so alarmed they had an international conference in Geneva where pathologists came from around the world to share this information. By that time, you had some embalming experts, morticians, who had photographed a whole room filled with these little tubes of these what looked like stuffed rubber bands. And then you showed one was rather gross, but it showed them not able to get embalming fluid into a patient or to a dead person because the veins and the arteries were clogged. So you see them pulling out from the major arteries with a tweezer this rubbery stuff, and they didn't know what it was. They'd never seen it before in their entire history. And one mortician said that 75% of all the people that he embalmed had this in them. Wow, what was it? Where'd it come from? Then another group of physicians and scientists began to examine this, and they began to see what it was. They were able to identify it. These were self-organizing nanoparticles that were lipid particles that were in the vaccine. This is part of the delivery system. And but no one had any idea, or so we thought or believed, that these could cause any problem. The body would absorb it and get rid of it in a day or two. After all, it was only going to be in your deltoid muscle on the arm. No. It went to every place in your body. Now, here's what Dr. Rose is going to tell you, and you'll see. Who did they exclude from getting the vaccines in their clinical trials with humans? Anyone with an autoimmune condition. Why? What's the big deal? Because who's going to get the vaccine once it's available? People with autoimmune conditions. So why would you exclude them from your study unless you knew or you presumed there may be a problem, and therefore over 100 million Americans alone have autoimmune conditions? So if you know that they're in your study and they're going to have a reaction, it could negate the value of your vaccine. So these self-organizing nanoparticles couldn't self-organize unless they were cloned to do so, genetically engineered to do so. And that opens up a whole door of why wasn't the chemistry of every single ingredient in this vaccine shared with the scientific and medical community? But it wasn't. She found a paper 11 years ago. They knew it would do this. Wow. What does that tell you? That scientists knew that self-organizing lipid particles could grow into vessels in the body and block them. And the more vaccines you got, the more of these you would get, and the more likely you would have autoimmune conditions. One more piece of the puzzle. Did they know it could cause harm? Yes, they did. We've seen that through Freedom Information Act documents. In fact, Dr. Naomi Wolf is devoting her life to sharing this information and working with 3,500 scientists and from around the world. They're getting hundreds of thousands of documents from the FDA, and only by court order were they able to do it. The FDA wanted to wait 75 years before they gave you this information out. So we would only know when everyone's dead now, who's an adult. They knew it was going to cause damage and kill people. One more piece of the puzzle. Now let's go to Dr. Jessica Rose.
The studies that I've reviewed show more people are ending up in the hospital and dying in the group that were injected. There are also a number of problems with repeat injections that are related to issues of tolerance by the immune system. It seems like there's a very clear story developing now that that tolerance is being induced by repeated exposure to the spike antigen. And basically what that means is that you're not going to be mounting any kind of immune response to that protein or anything related to it. So basically, if you're exposed to this virus, challenged by it, then you're not going to mount an effective immune response. And so I'm not sure I agree that these products have saved many lives. I'm much more focused on the damages that they've done, that's my meat. That's what I'm primarily focused on, because I don't think that the people who are injured have a voice. It's been taken away from them, and I want to be a voice for them. So this is my focus.
It seems to me that this knowledge that spike could be potentially cytotoxic was probably known somewhat in the scientific literature before we decided to go ahead. So why is it that it was dismissed or ignored?
I can't imagine that the people who are working on this didn't hypothesize that, since the modus operandi of this technology is to induce an immune response, an inflammatory response against the spike protein, that they wouldn't have anticipated that wherever the spike was going to be presented on MHC molecules or embedded in whatever cell, that an immune response wasn't going to be mounted in order to kill those cells, and that would cause, in some people, hyperinflammation. I mean, this comes back to the original trials where the exclusion criteria lists were so long. They discounted people with pre-existing autoimmune conditions, for example, and a lot of these have to do with hyperinflammation or a hyperinflamed state. So it could be, this is one of the things that I've hypothesized, that we're seeing the worst effects of these products in people who had pre-existing conditions, like some kind of hyperinflamed state, which a lot of people have. So I find it impossible to imagine that they didn't anticipate a potential problem, or the potential problem that most people who are reporting adverse events are reporting on. And this is the systemic notorious damage being done, say, to blood vessels or wherever the spike protein lands, like I said. And just to reinforce this, we were explicitly told that the contents of the needle were going to remain primarily at the injection site. We were really, really, this was hammered home. And they also knew, I want to reiterate this and make this very clear, as we know from the FOIA requested pharmacokinetic data, and also from a paper, which you can find in the supplementary material in my slides, from 11 years ago, that confirms that they knew, this is published in the literature, that these types of lipid nanoparticles traffic to the ovaries in the same animals. And the reason we do animal models is because we basically have the same organ system. So traffics to the ovaries in Wistar rats or mice, probably traffics to the ovaries in humans. And lo and behold, it does. So there's a lot of things, I know it's a long-winded answer, but there are a lot of things that they did know. And we know that they knew now because of forced FOIA requests. We wouldn't know this, half of what we know about the data or the studies that they did and didn't do, if we weren't asking for this data that they don't want to reveal. So I dare say that there's a lot that they knew. There's a lot that they know now and are... they're obfuscating from the public because it would be bad for the program.
And now I'm going to play you a short clip. It's actually a long interview between a whistleblower in Ukraine, who's Ukrainian, and another person he's speaking with. And it's about them going through some biological labs, including some that have been destroyed by Russia. And we were not discussing this in the United States. For example, when Gloria Nuland, under a committee hearing, was asked, do we have any biological labs in Ukraine? She had about, I think she said 23. That should have set off alarm bells. Why in the world would the United States put biological weapons labs in Ukraine, the most corrupt country in the world, and so close to Russia? Well, nobody wanted to know, or if they did, they were told, don't look there, don't open that door. Why? Because these biological labs are creating biological weapons, which are weapons of mass destruction, which is illegal. So nobody wanted to know we were doing this. Then it turns out we were doing this all over the world. We had these labs everywhere, including throughout the United States, through the Defense Department and DARPA. Why wouldn't we want to know what we're doing and why we're doing it? Is this where the SARS virus came from? Scientists say yes. Biological research, gain of function is biological weapons research. Because you don't take a normal virus that is non-pathogenic or minimally pathogenic or heavily pathogenic and then alter to make it a super pathogen, because that's what was done and has been proven. In fact, teams of virologists all over the world and geneticists found the cleaves where they actually inserted the HIV virus into this. And who told us that? The team that won the Nobel Prize for discovering the HIV virus at Luc Montagnier and his associates at the Institute of Pasteur. But they put other pathogens in there also, one that would create a Creutzfeldt disease or mad cow disease. So all these different diseases they could create were inserted into that virus. That's what we know now. That's proven. That's not speculation or conspiracy theory. But who did it and for what reason? Who did it, we know. For what reason, we don't. So, but in time, that'll come out. So here's what you're going to hear just briefly. You're going to, if you're watching, going to PRN.live, scrolling down to archives, scrolling down to Gary's notes, you'll see it. You'll see the interview. You can watch the whole thing if you want. But here's the gist of what they're saying. These biological labs were also where they were doing experiments with vaccines. They would offer a poor soldier $300, which they never gave the soldier, to come in and get experimental vaccines. But they had the paperwork. It was all over the floor. They scooped up the paper, they examined the papers, and here's Pfizer and all these well-known laboratories making vaccines. It was coming from them. Why has this never been up for congressional panel? What in the world was Pfizer doing, testing experimental vaccines before they were offered to soldiers in Ukraine who were demanded by their superiors get the vaccine, experimental vaccine at that time? And then it talks about in one group, three soldiers died almost immediately, and soldiers that they interviewed came down with all these side effects. None of that has ended up in the scientific literature. None of that has ended up in any television commentary. I'm sharing it with you for the first time. Now we'll go to that short clip.
Дорогі зрителі, ми знаходимося у здании компании FarmBioTest, уже многократно вам известной, мы ее показывали, сюжеты с ними. В этой компании, я напомню, помимо различных предоставлений медицинских услуг, в том числе проводили испытания лекарственных средств на живых людях, на добровольцах, но, грубо говоря, пользовались тем, что жители окрестных городов просто шли на это, не имея другой возможности заработать себе денежные средства. И вот мой собеседник Виталий Викторович Киселев, они нашли еще документы из этой.
Again, I don't expect anyone in the audience, unless you're from Ukraine or Russia and understand Ukraine, to deal with it. But you saw them holding up the pictures, you know, the letters and lab reports, and you see the names of American and Swiss companies, pharmaceutical companies on it. What's done in the dark is always dirty. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. And welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your input. Please give us a call. Let us know what you think on these issues. Now, here's a very important issue, and it's a big issue, and we're not addressing it. There's only one program that I've heard that addresses all different aspects of it. And historically, anyone talking about a new world order, or a single currency and a single governing body that would be selected by artificial intelligence, not our votes, and none of these people have been elected but Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum, they know best, so don't challenge them. No. We should challenge them. And who is sponsoring all this? The UN. Let's hear a clip. It's short. It's only a couple minutes. But this shows you what's happening right now, how they haven't hidden it. They're not disguising their motives. They're right out in the open. They've already said through their spokesperson, Professor Harari, we want to get a chip under your skin. Oh, and Klaus Schwab, in your brain. We want to know what you're thinking, and you will have no control over your thoughts. Yeah. And you're worthless and you're useless eaters. Yeah. You've heard and watched the clips here multiple times. Okay? So they're not playing. They're serious. And if you don't pay attention and you don't do something to help protect your own future and your own freedoms, then you're going to lose them. Let's go to the clip.
United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development. It is the inventory and control plan. Inventory and control of all land, all water, all minerals, all plants, all animals, all construction, all means of production, all food, all energy, all information, and all human beings in the world. And this is a plan that was agreed to by 179 nations back in 1992. It's a United Nations plan. It's called the Agenda for the 21st Century. And so many of us around the world think that sustainable development, it just sounds so great. Isn't it about recycling and creative reuse and creating energy and food resources for everyone? And the answer is no, it really is not. It's about moving populations into city centers, concentrated city centers, and clearing them out of the rural areas. It's constructed of non-governmental organizations, corporations, and government in order to dictate and regulate what it is that happens around the world. Regionalization is the stepping stone to globalization, and globalization is the standardization of all systems. All systems have to be brought into harmony in order to control them all. And the goal of Agenda 21 is one world government and total control from a central unit. The principles are public-private partnerships, which is fascism. And this is how it's implemented on the ground, is through this joining together between corporations, non-governmental organizations, and governments in order to cut out the actual individual, your voter, and instead to take that to a level where we literally cannot penetrate. This is a corporatocracy. It's a totalitarian state being developed right now all over the world. While we are moving towards the end game, we are not there. And this is the opportunity that all of us have now to stand up, to speak out. We are free, and we need to continue to be free. And I do believe that we will win, but we have to become aware that there is a fight.
Again, this is not conspiracy theory. This is happening. Just look at Canada, where Klaus Schwab bragged, and I played you the clip, oh, we have all these new young world leaders, and we've taught them everything about what is important for the future. He mentioned Justin Trudeau and his cabinet. He mentioned the president of Argentina and his cabinet. And then he later in a different one said in an interview, oh, we have our leaders all around the world. Angela Merkel was one. Barack Obama was on. Now you know that they've been grooming thousands of people to go into corporate interest, media interest, governmental interest, and do their bidding. And that's what they've been doing. So, your thoughts, 888-874-4888. And the mainstream media is telling you none of this. Oh, that's all nonsense. No, it's not. There is one person in the media who's told this, and he's been mocked and ridiculed and attacked for doing it. Now, I'm not a friend of Tucker Carlson. I disagree with him on multiple issues, including global warming. And I send him articles when I find that he said something I know is wrong, and I cite the science and peer-reviewed literature, and I've done this multiple times. But I also agree with this. I want to thank him for providing his forum that he didn't have to, and no one else in the liberal media has provided a platform for Matt Taibbi and Schollenthaler and Max Blumenthal and Aaron Maté and anyone, Glenn Greenwald. Max Blumenthal, the people who are liberal and then exposing corruption, and then they get attacked and deplatformed. they allowed his platform. Here he is talking about the media. And just ask yourself, has anyone else you know spoken about the media and the governmental agencies and corporate interests and Republican politicians as strongly as Tucker Carlson did? So on this issue, I commend him. On other issues, I challenge him. Let's hear what he has to say. Oh, and by the way, they laugh when he got fired. Good for him. Tucker Carlson's gone. No longer a problem. Let him go someplace. And no, his last interview garnered over 200 million downloads. A normal one, over 100 million. Joe Rogan's lucky to get 10 million. And he's 10 times more popular than Joe Rogan. So people are paying attention. So here's why they're paying attention. Now to the clip.
So when we tell you that the media are corrupt, we don't just mean they're corrupt politically. It is much deeper than that. It's funny how huge history-altering events can take place in this country and around the world, and most people seem to have no idea they happened.
As long as you can hear the words, there is hope. One of the first things you realize when you step outside the noise for a few days is how many genuinely nice people there are in this country. Kind and decent people, people who really care about what's true, and a bunch of hilarious people also, a lot of those. It's gotta be the majority of the population. The other thing you notice when you take a little time off is how unbelievably stupid most of the debates you see on television are. They're completely irrelevant. They mean nothing. In 5 years, we won't even remember that we had them. Trust me, as someone who's participated. And yet at the same time, and this is the amazing thing, the undeniably big topics, the ones that will define our future, get virtually no discussion at all. War, civil liberties, emerging science, demographic change, corporate power, natural resources. When was the last time you heard a legitimate debate about any of those issues? It's been a long time. Debates like that are not permitted in American media. Both political parties and their donors have reached consensus on what benefits them, and they actively collude to shut down any conversation about it. Suddenly, the United States looks very much like a one-party state. That's a depressing realization, but it's not permanent. Our current orthodoxies won't last. They're brain dead. Nobody actually believes them. Hardly anyone's life is improved by them. This moment is too inherently ridiculous to continue, and so it won't. The people in charge know this. That's why they're hysterical and aggressive. They're afraid. They've given up persuasion. They're resorting to force. You often hear people say the news is full of lies, but most of the time, that's not exactly right. Much of what you see on television or read the New York Times is in fact true in the literal sense. It could pass one of the media's own fact checks. Lawyers would be willing to sign off on it. In fact, they may have. But that doesn't make it true. It's not true. At the most basic level, the news you consume is a lie of the stealthiest and most insidious kind. Facts have been withheld on purpose, along with proportion and perspective. You are being manipulated. How does that work? Let's see. If I tell you that a man has been unjustly arrested for armed robbery, that is not, strictly speaking, a lie. He may have been framed. At this point, there's been no trial, so no one can really say. But if I don't mention the fact that the same man has been arrested for the same crime 6 times before, am I really informing you? No, I'm not. I'm misleading you. And that's what the news media are doing in every story that matters, every day of the week, every week of the year. The best you can hope for in the news business at this point is the freedom to tell the fullest truth that you can. But there are always limits. And you know that if you bump up against those limits often enough, you will be fired for it. That's not a guess, it's guaranteed. Every person who works in English language media understands that. The rule of what you can't say defines everything. It's filthy, really, and it's utterly corrupting. You can't have a free society if people aren't allowed to say what they think is true.
America is not rotten, it's a great place. The people who run it are rotten. So you've been betrayed by the people who lead you, and that's why things are so volatile. What you're looking at is a crisis of our institutions. Our institutions are corrupt. Some of them are collapsing. We say that a lot because it's true, but we should be more precise. Not all of our institutions are the same. Some of them are bad, some of them are awful. But looming above the rest is the worst of all, and that's the news media. They're the most corrupt. How corrupt is the news media? Imagine a drunken teenage border guard at the crossing between Togo and Burkina Faso, shaking you down at midnight as you pass through. The New York Times is much more corrupt than that. The media are more crooked than Jimmy Hoffa ever was. They're more dishonest than your average bribe-taking building inspector in Queens. They're more treacherous than the mafia. They make cops in Tijuana look trustworthy. You'll get a fairer treatment from an inner-city DMV than you would from CNN. Ask Nick Sandman. We could go on. Words can barely express the truth of it. Watching the news on television makes you question the system itself. But rather than be insulted, we've decided to pause for a moment and look at it a different way. Yes, the news media are profoundly dishonest. All of us lie from time to time. That's the human condition. But imagine if lying was your job. Imagine forcing yourself to tell lies all day about everything in ways that were so transparent and so outlandish that there is no way the people listening to you could possibly believe anything you said. Then imagine doing that again and again and again every day of your professional life for your entire life. Could you do that? Take a look at these gold medalists in duplicity and ask yourself as you watch, could you say something like this with a completely straight face about Kamala Harris?
She's incredibly successful and she does everything professionally with the utmost integrity.
Kamala Harris is independent, successful, strong, but she's also a devoted wife and she's not ashamed of that.
And I would say that her performance as a running mate was flawless. I mean, other than Barack Obama in my career, I've not seen anybody really who came in with that kind of raw material. She fits the moment in such a powerful way.
She is what every working woman strives to be.
Of course, she's flawless. Kamala Harris is everything women want to be. False, hollow, cunning, consumed with political power, really a model for your daughters. Make that woman vice president. And so they did. And on the night they did, they celebrated. In fact, celebration might be too mild a word. What happened on cable television that night is typically, and by law in a lot of places, confined to bedrooms and other private spaces. But that night they did it in public, and they were proud of it. Here was primetime over on CNN.
I almost can't talk right now because of the emotion. Everyone is welcome under this tent. We don't care who you are. We don't care if you voted for us or not. You're all part of this American experiment. I was so overwhelmed to hear that. I don't care what people think, if they think I'm biased or not, I don't care. And so I'm very emotional. So when you ask me how I'm feeling right now, I'm sorry. That's all I can tell you. This is how I feel right now. I am so happy to have this platform to be able to do this. I may not have it after this, but I really don't care. I am so happy.
Everyone is welcome under this tent. They're all invited. Except the white supremacists and the QAnon people and anyone else who disagrees with anything we say. They're all going to jail.
Those lights that are just shooting out from the Lincoln Memorial along the reflecting pool, it's like almost extensions of Joe Biden's arms embracing America.
Not everyone is as poetic as David Chalian, the man you just saw. That's why he's CNN's political director. An ordinary journalist might not even have noticed that Joe Biden's arms are like twin beams of light shooting forth from the reflecting pool, embracing America as a mother embraces a child. No, an ordinary journalist might simply have described Joe Biden's arms as toned and tawny and redolent of musk and saddle leather. The thing about journalism is it's not an individual achievement. It's about the group. In journalism, it's the collective spirit that matters. Like synchronized swimmers or certain species of insects, journalists move together in concert, as a herd, if you will. When Joe Biden writes a talking point, they repeat it, not just a few of them, but all of them in precisely the same way. Members of the press corps inform you that this new group of politicians in Washington is very different from any other group of politicians in all of human history. Unlike the rest of them, these people are committed to something called the truth.
President Joe Biden making it clear his administration will be nothing like his predecessors, with a focus on truth, science, and transparency.
A commitment to clarity, transparency, science, and truth.
A return to normalcy as the Biden administration vows truth and transparency now.
As the Biden White House vows transparency and truth when sharing information with the American people, what does that mean? We're going to talk about it.
As this White House promises to bring truth and science back to the White House.
It's getting back to the truth.
and valuing the truth.
Getting back to the truth, valuing the truth. Now there's a refreshing concept. Who does that remind you of, by the way? We don't want to be patriarchal here, but if we're being totally honest, that sounds a lot like Dad. A little blunt sometimes, but honest, a straight shooter. Solid, reliable, steady. That's Joe Biden. The Biden's love is like medicine. It's more powerful than the COVID vaccine, and you only need one injection. Watch Dr. Joy Reid prescribe a whole lot more of it.
What a story, though. What a great love story between Jill Biden and Joe Biden. It's just a different kind of marriage. This is a love match like the Obamas were. So I think that'll be healing for the country, too.
Yeah, it will be. The Biden's love will be healing for this country. It'll make us whole again. It might even stop looming hyperinflation and keep the Chinese Navy from closing the South China Sea to international shipping. That's the kind of love it is. Big changes in the tiny hothouse, and it is tiny, of cable news this evening. CNN's top-rated anchor, Chris Cuomo, has been pulled off the air, likely for good. We'll probably never see him on camera again. For us here at Fox, it feels like the end of something. Like most Americans, we never actually watched the Chris Cuomo show, assuming that was its name. But over the years, we saw his clips, and they transfixed us. Very often as a public service, but also because honestly we could not help ourselves, we brought them to you. How, we wondered, did a man who could barely speak English wind up with a paying job on television? Was it some kind of weird affirmative action program for the illiterate? We never figured it out, but it was remarkable to see it. Sentence after badly mangled sentence, a bouillabaisse of incomprehensible grammar. You couldn't understand any of it. It was a kind of performance art. A communicator wholly unable to communicate. But his bosses didn't care. Before you knew it, Chris Cuomo was back on television, barking at you for, yes, not wearing a mask.
Put on the damn mask. If you're in California, if you're in Riverside, wear the mask. If you want to avoid situations like this where you live, wear the mask. If we care about doing the right things, I wear a mask for you as much as I wear it for me. I had the disease. You need to wear a damn mask.
Right.
And you have to take care of other people in your community, and it's got to be about us, because the help's not going to come from above.
Said the guy who screamed at someone else for pointing out that he was not wearing a mask. But once again, Chris Cuomo's bosses weren't bothered at all. At CNN, there is no penalty for falseness. The only thing you can't do at CNN, the thing that they will never tolerate, is displeasing the people in charge. That means not simply Jeff Zucker, who runs the company, but the billionaires who run our country. If you cross them, you're done. You help them when they need it. Period. It's called loyalty. At CNN, as at the rest of the media, this is an alien concept. Is there a single person at CNN or any other left-wing network who would risk his job to help his own brother? No. Above all, these people are careerists, ruthless careerists. They would betray anyone to get ahead. Sometimes you wonder just how filthy and dishonest our news media are. You'll be in the shower and you'll think, they're bad, but how bad are they? Well, here's one measure of their badness. You can try this at home. Ask yourself, is any news organization you know of so corrupt that it's willing to hurt you on behalf of its biggest advertisers? Anyone who do that is obviously Pablo Escobar level corrupt and should not be trusted. What would that look like? That level of corruption. Well, imagine that the Trump administration had made it mandatory for American citizens to buy MyPillow. That's one of Fox News' biggest advertisers. Imagine the administration declared that if you didn't rush out and buy at least one MyPillow, and then at least another booster pillow, you would not be allowed to eat out. You couldn't re-enter your own country. You couldn't have a paying job. MyPillow, they told you with a straight face, was the very linchpin of our country's public health system. Now imagine as they told you that Fox, as a news organization, endorsed it, amplified the government's message. Imagine if Fox News attacked anyone who refused to buy MyPillow as an ally of Russia, as an enemy of science. And then imagine that Fox kept up those libelous attacks even as evidence mounted that MyPillow caused heart attacks, fertility problems, and death. If Fox News did that, what would you think of Fox News? Would you trust us? Of course you wouldn't. You would know that we were liars. Thank heaven Fox News never did anything like that, but the other channels did. The other channels took hundreds of millions of dollars from big pharma companies, and then they shilled for their sketchy products on the air. And as they did that, they maligned anyone who was skeptical of those products. At the very least, this was a moral crime. It was disgusting, but it was universal. It happened across the American news media. They all did it. So at this point, the question isn't who in public life is corrupt, too many to count. The question is, who is telling the truth? Considering what's happening in Ukraine, topic most of us don't know much about because the details are not reported. It was a year ago that every media outlet in the United States, from USA Today to the New York Times, told you it was a dangerous conspiracy theory to believe the US government had ever funded secret biolabs in Ukraine. The idea was ridiculous. In fact, it was Russian disinformation. And then one day, in sworn testimony, Toria Nuland of the State Department accidentally admitted that it was true. Yes, she said, there are many secret biolabs in Ukraine. And, quote, we are now, in fact, quite concerned that Russian troops, Russian forces, may be seeking to gain control of them.
Your thoughts. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'd like to hear you calling in and sharing your points of view. 888-874-4888. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. They go to the news for the last 5 minutes. We'll be continuing, and I hope to hear from you at 888-874-4888. We've shared a lot of insights, including what Tucker just said. Don't trust the media. The mainstream media has been lying. Indeed, for decades upon decades, the Vietnam War, all that was a lie. Afghanistan, that was a lie. That Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11, that was a lie. Think of all the things that we did wrong when we believed those in power. It didn't matter whether Republican or Democrat, that Gaddafi was a threat to his own people, a lie. Assad was killing his own people, a lie. Well, it's just nothing but lies. Eat the food, it's good for you. No, it's not. That's a lie with terrible consequences. So here's my question. At what point, when you've been lied to thousands of times by everyone in the mainstream media, do you simply walk away from them, find other sources of quality information? All right? I'd like your response. So we're off WBAI. And while I'm waiting for calls to come in, I don't want to share my views. I'd like to hear yours now. I just wanted to let you know that coming up very quickly, and we have one opening left. That's it for our retreat this September in the second week. Let's hear a clip from someone who's been at a retreat. Just to give an idea. Because mind you, you never hear anyone saying, well, I went to Disney World or I went to Grand Canyon and it changed my life. No, they might have had a good time. They enjoyed themselves, and that's fine. But here, it actually has helped people refocus on the reality of their own existence and what potential they have, with an enormous support group comes together to help them. Let's go to a clip.
Hi, my name is Layla. I came here with my mom, kind of on a whim, and it turned out to be a great experience. I learned how wonderful it is to engage with people who are much older than me, probably about two generations, one generation in difference. And I had a great time, and I realized how important it is to kind of ground yourself with nature and other people and kind of be away from the stresses that normal life kind of throws at you and you have to endure for your whole life. So this was a very relaxing and de-stressing experience, and I recommend it for people of all ages. I'm 20 years old, and it was one of the best experiences so far. So, yeah.
If we have another one, we'll do one more.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Gail Washburn, and I'm here from California. And what I've experienced here is just being in nature. The environment here has been a peaceful and energizing at the same time experience. The food has been fantastic. The gourmet cooking is, I love it. And what I think I've learned the most is that, well, a few things. I feel energized and challenged to go home and implement and all the things I've learned here to take better care of myself, to be more, a more sustainable life, And, you know, I think Gary's on a mission to save the world, and I want to be part of that. So my challenge is to grow myself. And so I'm looking forward to going home and incorporating all that I've learned here. Hi.
Good. Those are just two people. 98% of the people who come to a retreat volunteer to do just testimonials on a Friday when the program's over. They just pick up a phone and say, here's what my experience was. No coaching. Real people from all walks of life, from all ages, from 20 to 98, they all had a great time. Something memorable, remarkable moments, and great workshop leaders. We've had Mitchell Raven help people with energy exchange. We've had Dr. Peter Resnick, who will be there this time as well, helping people go into a deeper state of how to deal with depression and anxiety disorders. We've had exercise classes, water aerobic classes, and just green time sitting with nature. And then I do kind of the fun, lots of laughter, but deep lectures about life later on. If that interests you, give Luann a call. We only have spot for one. We're filled. 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. And something else. I got a letter about, I guess, 2 weeks ago. And someone was saying, well, Gary, you know, I heard your thing on trans, and I respect the fact that you are for gay rights and lesbians' rights. And I said, yes, I am. Because they're human beings. They're sacred spirits. They deserve, if a man is attracted to a man, if a woman is attracted to a woman, that's their right. And if a trans person, an adult, I respect them too. I work with them. I have, you know, great respect. What I challenge is young kids being groomed to believe that the body they're in is not the body they want, and then going through radical surgeries and drug therapy that can cause infertility for life. And we all know that all of us have gone through transitions growing up until we finally figured out who we were. That's fine. Let kids believe and act out in any way they want. But let them be kids also. Our generation, we're allowed to be kids. Today, not so much. So when they said this, and they said, well, you know, you're talking about athleticism. Why are you talking about it? You're not an athlete. I said, well, I may not talk about my athleticism, but yes, I am an athlete. I've been an athlete my entire life, since seventh grade on the football team, through high school, through college, when I was on the varsity basketball team. And I'm going to send you a sample, just a small sample, of what I've been able to achieve in my athletic career. Well, we just posted it today. So if you want to see, if it interests you, what I've done and how I rank within the most elite athletes in America in my competition, it's there now. And it's not me saying any of this. It's all third persons. All right? And so you can go up and to GaryNoll.com. That's GaryNoll.com. Then go to where it says Gary's Lifetime Awards. It's the first picture you see, and their bottom two in the right corner are the most recent. And then you hit that, and probably 10% of what I've done is there. It'll take you about 20 minutes to go through it. But here's the fun part. I put in there photographs of all those people, not all, but a lot of people who came with no background in athleticism and became world-class elite athletes. You'll see Thelma Wilson. You'll see Sam Skinner and Sid Howard. You'll see Queenie Thompson. You'll see some of the best athletes ever, and they're there. We're all doing it together. You'll see 500 to 1,000 people coming on a Sunday. You'll see the pictures. And you'll see those of us who are running and winning every single race that we went to in America for years. We had anywhere, you'll see, count them. You'll see they're holding their awards. We're outside in the snow, summertime, and you'll see them. You'll see Luann there. You'll see Jeannie Emmerich there. You'll see all these people who did something that no matter what they do the rest of their life, they did it, they won it, it's theirs. So if you want to see what you look like back then go and you'll see the photographs. And then I selected just at random three videos, one where I was in the indoor chant national championships, and you'll see, you can watch. I had my own lap counters there, and they were yelling off my time per lap, and I was right on the button, right on the second. I did 12 minutes and 6 seconds. It's a world record, shattering the American record, shattering it. And but the lap counter walked away a couple times, and you'll see me go right by, and he didn't know I went by him. So I did 2 extra laps. In spite of that, I still set an American record. So I was flying. You'll see that race. Then you'll see the outdoor 15K race where I set a record. And these were some Olympians on that in that race. And then, and that was a longer race. And then you'll see a short race where I had to come from behind, but did so right at the finish line and set a record. Just 3. And but a lot of people, you're going to see lots of people. And I hope you go there just to see what you look like and when it was. And if you can remember back how wonderful those times were. Okay, go to GaryNall.com. Scroll down to Gary's Lifetime Awards. It's the first picture you see. I'm standing there where I just won Athlete of the Year in Florida and track and field and race walking. And the woman who was the Women Athlete of the Year. That's the picture that's on there, and that's where it starts. And then there's a whole photo gallery. Okay, so for the person who said, I'm not an athlete, therefore why am I talking about starting a, there should be a trans league. Well, there should be a trans league, a fair one, where if they compete and they win, good for them. I acknowledge that. But I don't acknowledge a man who's not even a good athlete becoming the world champion when they compete against women. That is not fair. We're out of time, everyone. And if you want to call Luann, you can. I'll give you her number real quick. Luann's number is 903-881-7008. Have a nice day and stay tuned for the Oracle of Harlem, Jeremiah, coming up right now.